Hi, this is Greg Robertson, and welcome to another episode of Listing Bits. With me today, I've got another very special guest, Joel McIntosh from Wolfnet, CEO of Wolfnet. Joel, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Boy, I feel good, and I feel very special when you say it like that. It's just great.
I think the running joke on this podcast is like, everybody's a special guest. So when I say to somebody, they're just my guest today, they're probably just going to be really pissed off at me later on, right? I know about you a lot, you know, you guys have been around forever, you know, a little original gangster in the space. But tell me the story of Wolfnet.
Man, geez. Well, we have been around the block a bit. We started out as a, you know, very early on as just as a web development company. So we did custom development, more software. We did all kinds of different things starting
in the real estate space?
No, actually not. That was, okay. It was prior to real estate. Our pre-real estate life was in work for hire stuff, working by the hour. And we bumped into real estate first in 97 by, you know, a client that had a web developer that went AWOL, because at that time, everybody was, all the web developers were in a basement, you know, in a garage. There was no agencies. So we were one of the first. There was Roger Fasden Realtors came to us, and in 2000 or so, I got a phone call from the broker, and he said, "Hey, there's this thing called broker reciprocity, and Edina Realty has it, and Coldwell Banker Burnett has it as well, and I'd like to get it." So that was the beginning of our entree into real estate.
And what's your background? I mean, where did you go to school as far as, did you get a marketing degree, a computer science, or what?
Yeah, I went to school at the University of Minnesota. It was an 8-year program because it was just so difficult for me. I think I got a year and a half done in the first 4 years while I was trying to figure out what the hell I really wanted to do. And then once I figured it out, I buckled down and went to the Carlson School of Management, got a degree in small business management entrepreneurship.
Yeah, so it's wild to think like you can actually get a degree in entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah. It was an interesting time. I didn't know what I wanted to do, right, which is why it took me so long. So I'm a proponent of, you know, if people want to take a little more time figuring out what they want to do before going to school, making that commitment. Nothing wrong with taking a little time working and figuring out the world before you go to get a degree and something you regret later. So,
no kidding. Yeah. Also, like I heard, didn't you and Victor Lund of Wave Group, did you guys go to school when you were kind of younger?
Right? Yeah, we were high school buddies. We went to Shattuck St. Mary's in Faribault, Minnesota, which is now, it's partly known for being a hockey school. Mm-hmm. And they produced some pretty impressive NHL players over the years. Yeah, and Victor and I were good buds back then. And I saw him at an Inman conference maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And I was talking to Brian Larson, standing there. And Brian's a great guy, right?
Right.
You got to love that dude. And all of a sudden, I get a tap on the shoulder. I turn around and go, "Oh, hey, Victor." And then double take, like, "Hey, what the hell are you doing here?"
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the irony of that was that at that time, he didn't really know anybody in the space. And, you know, he's kind of brand new to it. So I'm introducing him to people. Obviously, today he's introducing me to everybody,
yeah,
right? So it's kind of fun.
No, I mean, a lot of things like I went to a high school with Dave Rifkin. He's kind of VP of sales over at FBS.
Sure.
So there's a lot of – it's funny kind of finding those connections.
Absolutely.
And seeing things, yeah. Yeah, so right now, right? I mean, you guys are – so when did you found the company?
So 1996. 97 was the – you know, really the formative years.
Yeah.
So I didn't do a very good job describing like where did we come from and how it all happened. But, you know, we experimented with a lot of tech and we were, you know, super early on many different notes. Like we were doing streaming video in 98, you know, 97, 98, 99. We were taking VHS cassette tapes and recording that into Windows machines. And it would take 10 to 12 hours to process, you know, a 15 to 20 minute video that then we would encode through the Real Player codec, and you'd have to do a 288K version and a 56K version. And we were streaming. We thought that was really cool. And it was just really early, you know, it was the right thing, but it was early. We were doing e-commerce. We were doing something similar to, you know, Yelp that we developed for a client. We did all kinds of stuff. And it turned out that it was just too early. And real estate was great because it was like, hey, this is really, really interesting. This is at the cutting edge. We get to be at the cutting edge. There's a lot of interest in it. The industry seemed very ready for it. So it was really exciting for us to go down that path. And then, you know, as we saw the recurring revenue model start to develop, you know, I wish I could say I master engineered all this stuff, but, you know, sometimes good fortune comes from just hard work, putting your nose to the grindstone, right, and getting after it. But we saw that recurring revenue start coming, and we're like, this is really cool. We own the product, and we can, you know, help people out, and everybody's happy with how this works, and it creates value for us. And
you still do a lot of custom work at all, or is it just mainly focused on IDX?
No, so we moved away from all the custom work. Yeah. In fact, even in real estate, we were doing a lot of custom broker sites, and we found that it was a difficult business to be in. It was really challenging because there's
dollars
a lot of,
enormous demand. Dollars for hours, right?
I mean, yeah, it's dollars per hours, scale. and it's a lot of demand. So we sort of made the decision to exit that space,
right,
and focused in on data and on property search and on data services.
But it's a very common thing that I hear, like custom shops or web shops, where they fund themselves by doing a lot of custom work while they're working on their own product, develop that into a kind of a SaaS model, right? And then as that kind of annuity builds, that SaaS business builds, they can now shy away from the custom work. And
absolutely,
once they got that recurring revenue stream,
absolutely,
starts going better. Yeah,
absolutely. So, I mean, I have a debt of gratitude to a lot of the folks that we worked with in the past, and we didn't leave them hanging or anything like that.
But right,
there's no question about it. That helped fund the development and whatnot.
I mean, so with that, I mean, what right now today, 2017, what is your like flagship product? What do you kind of sell the most of?
I think our flagship product right now is the data services and consulting around it is really the biggest value that we bring. We still do IDX, we still do websites, and then the data services. So it's like the subscription stuff and then more of an enterprise type type sale. But it's fun in the data space because, you know, we get to see a lot of different business models, a lot of innovation coming into the space, and we can help people fundamentally bring their product to market faster, help them understand the landscape a little bit better. And it's very gratifying to be in, you know, to be involved in that.
Yeah, because it seems to me like, I mean, there's these initiatives that are going on. It started happening when Trestle was first announced and some other stuff. And I wrote this article calling it, "It's Raining APIs," right? And where I kind of pointed out that it seems like a lot of these guys are now beginning to realize that something that Mike Werzer over at FBS had done like 5 years prior with this Spark, right? And how, you know, it's like the traditional MLS vendors just kind of woke up like, oh, you know, yeah, this does make sense, you know, duh. I mean, it's been going on a while. And then, we were talking last night, a little bit too late into the night, and you have how many MLSs are defined, you know, set up for feeds?
Yeah, I think, so last week, I believe we turned on the 635th.
Jesus, good Lord. Yeah.
So I get a little surprised and I looked at it, and in that particular market, there were a total of 884 listings total from.
So yeah, let's talk about, I want to talk about that, but you have, so, you know, Trestle is just kind of announced to get going, right? I think I talked to Kevin last night and they have 50 people or 50 MLSs that are going to kind of have given the go ahead to kind of, you know, give it a shot and sign up to be part of it.
Sure.
And then he's going to have an API attached to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, vendors are going to be able to go to that and kind of use it in the coming future. But you kind of had this going on for now, 600 and how many again?
35.
635 MLS. So that's up and running now.
It is.
How long has it been running for?
Well, I mean, that's, like I said, it started in 2000, 2001, right, in Minnesota, and then one by one, slowly but surely. Yeah. So I think we went through a big growth phase in MLS markets in 2008 to 2012, right in there. It was a, you know, pretty big run.
So can you talk about some of the customers that you have right now that are using that kind of feed with API access?
API. Well, so let me just to kind of explain the groundwork here a little bit. So when we make the data available, like we do the data services, which is, okay, you know, helping companies standardize the data, and help them kind of get up and running pretty quickly. We provide the data predominantly through a direct database access. And most of the customers want that. Most of the bigger, you know, players, they have data scientists. They want to dig through this stuff. They want a copy of it.
Right.
And it's a fundamental change for somebody to go, well, I'm not going to have a copy anymore. I have to use a transactional API. That's a big deal, right? Yeah. So most of our clients like that. They prefer the direct database over RETS because it's more flexible and it's SQL, right? So that's number one. Number two is that we built ourselves an API, right? Because we were tired of our legacy product and it took too much time and developers hate working on old stuff and being code monkeys and everything else. So we, you know, the tech team came forward and said, hey, this is our proposal for, you know, building an API and we can consume that and it'll be awesome. It'll take less maintenance and less time and all that. So we did that. And then we rewrote our property search application to, you know, to hit that API. So, you know, and part of the reason for also building the API was thinking that, you know, on the data services side, we thought, well, you know, it'd be nice for other companies might elect a transactional API. And it's not just an API, but it has all the business logic built in. It has all the rules and regulations built in and disclaimers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's available as well. We can, you know, make that available. And even,
but you're saying the real demand is just give me the, you know, I want access to that data, that database.
I think there's two customers, really, the profiles, if you will. Mm-hmm. One is more of the more established companies that have a pretty significant need. And then there's newer companies, very lightweight, bootstrapped, you know, and they don't want to have a stack of servers. They don't want to have data centers. They, you know, they want a transactional API. They want to be able to take a product and bring it into a, you know, minimum viable product and do it inexpensively and do it quickly. And I think as the life cycle of the, of a company like that goes, maybe after a year, a couple of years, they start getting good adoption. They'd be like, okay, now we need the data in our systems now. So it's, I think it's great for those innovators and it's very enabling in the space. And
I talked to my business partner, Dan, and we were having some discussions about this and he's a smart guy. So I asked him these like dumb questions about all this stuff and what, you know, APIs and this and that. He's like, you know, it's probably good to start using them. But once you reach a certain amount of data or number of MLS, let's say it's 40 or 50, at that point, you're going to want to like, you know, aggregate the data and have it yourself right now, either through, you know, you guys or yourself or doing something like that.
Yeah, Dan's a smart guy. If he says 40, we always use that number. It's something magic about it. I don't know why.
Well, it depends on the right 40, right? Because I mean, what is it I read somewhere? It's like 70 MLSs comprise 90% of the listings or something like that.
Not quite. Yeah.
This is interesting. Like, cause you were spouting off some kind of data points last night that I thought were really, really. So give me some of that stuff, especially the part about the last 250 or something where you said,
So it's something like this. There's under 10 MLSs that have a more than 100,000 active listings, like in a data share type environment. Mm-hmm. There's about 118 or so that have 25,000 or more. It takes about 234 MLSs to get to 90% of the listing inventory.
It does. So that's a kind of fallacy there. Yeah, 230 is 90%.
Yeah, it gets right up there. You get 250, gets you to like 91 point something percent. So that means that if there are 750 MLSs, thereabouts, let's just call it that.
Yeah.
That means there's 500 MLSs that comprise roughly 8.6% of the listing inventory.
That's amazing.
And if you look further at it, there's
500 MLSs only comprising 8% of the listings.
That's correct.
500.
Yeah. So that definitely validates this concept of consolidation and the rest of it. And it makes sense. But the other thing that's kind of funny is that, well, it's not funny, but I think it's funny kind of. 500 MLSs have fewer than 3,000 listings.
500 MLSs have fewer than 3,000.
300 MLSs have fewer than 1,000.
Jesus.
So it's a lot of work. I mean, if you think about the, you know, you guys work.
And the smaller ones are usually the harder to do, right?
They can be tricky. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of feedback. You know, you're generally speaking not going to get a lot of, you know, support. And if there's an issue, you just deal with it. You know, if they say 2 + 2 = 5, you put -1 and call it a day, right? Yeah. You know, to fix it.
That's wild, dude. I mean, you should put that in some sort of infographic stat. I mean, that would be shared by everybody out there. That's just fascinating. I'm really kind of driving that consolidation kind of a wave that's going on here. You can see with that kind of stuff. Why? Wow. Well, I mean, it's interesting. So, I mean, can you talk about who some of your customers are? Or you'd rather not?
No, I can. I mean, I'm actually, I kind of like to say that, you know, there's people that help bring it, right? And I definitely recognize them. You know, back in the day, we started working with Zip Realty and when Lanny Baker was chief there, I think we were helping him out in, you know, 60 some odd markets. And then we went to an Inman conference, which would have been, 3 years ago, roughly. And we heard the announcement that Realty purchased them, right? So our operations manager, who's also my wife, who I love dearly, right? Of course, she comes up to me and says, did you hear about Zip? you know, Real G bought him? What do you think? And I was like, yeah, I did hear that. She goes, what do you think is going to happen? I said, I don't know, but I hope it's good.
We could, you could take news like that either way. You could panic or just like, hey, maybe it'll be more business.
And I'm an eternal optimist. So, right. I mean, I'm always looking at the bright side. So they expanded the relationship, and it's been wonderful. They're a great company to work with. Really fun. We've worked with some people at Realogy too through the process, and great company, you know, really good people. Realty Executives International, we've worked with them for years, and through a transition of ownership recently, you know, great group over there. The folks at Smarter Agent, you know, the Blumberg brothers are fantastic, you know, guys that have been in the space for a long time that really get it. You know, it's fun to work with people that really understand fundamentally what, you know, how the business works and, you know, who's who and all the rest of it. Ben Kinney, who's a good friend of mine. He's a super smart guy, you know, and he's made a lot of things happen over the years. So I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to work with him. You know, Back Agent is a customer. 10X is one that we work with. Altasource. There's a pretty long list. That's awesome. I wish I could list them all off and give them all credit.
But, you know, to me, like, it's interesting because, like, I think I'm educated in the space, and, you know, and I kind of knew you're doing some stuff, but I just didn't put it together that it was like a product or service that you were selling out there in the space.
Yeah.
And with all these new initiatives, it just goes back to what I was kind of proving with FBS. I mean, these things have been out there for a while, and it's just interesting that now they just get, I guess the reason they're getting some publications is because these bigger companies are doing them, right?
Yeah, I think Werzer had the right idea. The guy is smart. He was ahead of everybody else when it came to the API and sourcing it out like that, making it happen quickly for folks. When we first, you know, we got into this business because we kept getting phone calls, and I'm an entrepreneur. I hate saying no when there's money on the table, right? It's hard to say no, but people kept calling up saying, hey, can I get the MLS? I need a nationwide MLS team. You can't have that. And my first thought was, you know, it's a great barrier to entry. I'm in a great competitive spot. Why the hell would I give them?
I like it deep and wide.
Let me just keep going this way. And then, you know, that lasted 10 minutes, and we thought about it and said, yeah, if we can't operate on the merits of our product, we're in trouble. So that was kind of the birth of the data services, and we productized the whole deal. So we process contracts too. So we do vendor contracts, and we help with agent broker contracts.
So you have like a built-in kind of permissioning. So when you say you help with that, like, do you have people that manage, you know, getting those permissions? And
we do.
That's awesome.
So we work through an average probably somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 contracts per month that we're, you know, processing.
Yeah. So these are either IDX sites or something
PIP. IDX file, vendor contracts, all of it.
So, I mean, are you providing like photo URLs, some sort of CDN for that stuff? Or
yeah. So all the data is standardized. We do some normalization, but we, you know, I think one of the differences, we don't take all the data and look at it like this is for a portal. Each geography has unique characteristics and we preserve them. And so it gives an opportunity, depending on how people want to use the data, it gives them more flexibility. And then we normalize some stuff as well. And then the photos, we put all the photos on URLs. So we have, I don't know, 150 million. Yeah. Photos. And that's, generally speaking, it's a challenge. It's probably for anybody that gets to like 40 markets when they get in that space. That's when what really starts to hurt is dealing with the photos, because it's one of the biggest complaints and it's one of the biggest assets.
But I thought you also add, I mean, there's some extra services there that you do with the photos as well, if I remember correctly. Right?
Yeah, we do some processing. So we'll take the, you know, the full size photo and process it down to make sure there's a good thumbnail that works with, you know, mobile devices and iPads. And just the fact that people don't have to download them is a huge benefit. Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal. And then we have some other add-ons around it. So we don't change the MLS data per se, only if they misspell Mississippi or Chicago, we'll fix that. But address data can be kind of tricky. So we take that and process it. So we do address verification and standardization, lots of geocoding. Geocoding is expensive and it's complicated. That's a huge benefit. I mean, you go national data, you need to spend $125,000 just to deal with geocodes, really. And then recently added in public records data through a partnership. I mean, we've had clients asking us, hey, can you sell us this stuff? I said, well, we don't source that. We don't do that. We still want you to sell it to us. Can you go buy it from somebody else and sell it to me for the you know, the same price, we'd rather have, you know,
the one vendor
yeah, type relationship. So we've been, you know, adding on more and more of those types of features. And as you can connect all those data points, that creates significant value for folks.
Yeah. And I think like on those things, I mean, if I remember, are you guys like on the photos? I mean, you can add like alt tags or something as far as what the photo's showing to.
Yeah. Thank you. You're prompting me and I appreciate that. I was telling you that we have a...
That wasn't that drunk last night.
Yeah, that's right. So we're doing image categorization and tagging.
That's awesome.
It's a fun project.
Real Scout has done that with some of their stuff.
They have.
You have it for how many... So explain to the listeners what that means.
So what it means is that in layman's terms, right, we'd like to know, what is this photo? Where is it? Well, it's the kitchen, or that's the backyard, or it's a porch or a patio, a bedroom or a bathroom. Could be a mudroom. You know, it's a laundry room. It's something. So you want to have a category. You want to be able to put it in a category because it's kind of cool to know what that category is. And if somebody is searching for a home and they want to see what the kitchens are, well, it'd be kind of cool to get results and you're seeing the kitchen instead of the front of the house. You don't have to go through all the pictures.
I mean, when you were saying it, now I've said this to Andrew over Real Scout when I saw his thing for CMA, right? So great for comps, right? Okay. Let's compare kitchens with your kitchen to every kitchen out there, right? Let's compare master bedrooms and really give the seller kind of like, oh shit.
Why is mine so much less? Let me show you why.
Let me show you why. Right, but I mean, breaking him down like that and be able to do that is like, yeah, we have to talk after this because I really want to see if we can work a deal for that because that's awesome.
So the tagging is the other part of that, which is it's mostly white. That looks like wood. That's stainless steel. That's a sink. That's a vanity. That's a mirror.
Kitchen island?
That's an island.
So you have not only the actual what room descriptor, right? Like bedrooms, bathroom, you know, mudroom, whatever.
But
also, you have some attributes in there too.
So how many white kitchen instead of, you know, white kitchen with, you know, stainless steel appliances. And, you know, that's a tough project because, you know, training a neural network, you have to give it examples and you have to give it pure examples. And then it has to, you know, take those pure examples and then you give it something that's kind of goofy, like a photo of the kitchen, but it's open to the living room. So there's a couch and a TV and a fireplace and an island and a sink and a refrigerator. And the thing has to look at it and go, what is that?
I know a little bit about the technology. There's also a human component sometimes as well, right?
That's right.
It's using both those tools to kind of get that efficiency up, right?
Yeah. And we use the humans for correcting and for enhancing and making it better. But when you're dealing with that many, more north of 100 million photos, it's...
So you're saying you have north of 100 million photos that have that attributes and tagging?
We haven't gone all the way with all of them quite yet. So we've worked on this project for... a little over a year, and we have set pretty high standards for ourselves. We want
good quality.
We want it to be really good quality. We want to just open it up, and you know, I don't like to sell vaporware. Not in that space. So, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to release it full on as an enhancement for our customers and something that we can use as ourselves. Maybe the end of next quarter, I think we'll be there.
Oh wow! Yeah. So, and how many photos do you think it'll be by then?
We'll do all of them.
Jesus, dude. That's awesome. I mean, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I know that Amazon is releasing tools as far as that image categorization and some of the things like that, but for vendors out there that want to, my mind explodes on the ways that different software applications can use that.
Oh yeah. I mean, just the tags and people that do Elasticsearch and natural language type stuff, there's a lot of data in those photos.
Dude,
a lot.
I said, we're going to talk after this.
Good.
It's a great thing. So, what's kind of new for you guys? I mean, that's a great project. Yeah. I mean, that's taken a lot of work. I mean, anything on the horizon you see be kind of a new thing?
Yeah, we've been playing with, you know, being that we deal with so much data, we've been dealing with a new loader. This is kind of geeky, right? Mm-hmm. I get a little techie here and again, even though I'm probably not qualified anymore. But new data loaders. So we've been experimenting with, we're releasing a new product called Pipeline. It's like a continuous updater, right? So it's built on a queuing system. So most vendors out there, they go out and get a chunk of data and say, okay, in the last, you know, give me the last 15 minutes worth. There's a stack. Maybe it's 10 listings. Maybe it's 250.
This is Elasticsearch, right? This percolation.
This just how we process.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Now, so we do
take,
the same
you
thing.
Take with- the two, say there's 200, 250, and then you take that batch and process them, and then out the other end, the stuff goes. Well, if you get 250 listings, let's say you're on listing 232, and something goes haywire. That right. batch goes to shit, and yeah. then you got to do it over again, and you got to figure out what happened and all the rest of it. So we built a new loader. The way it works is we go get all that data. We get the 250 and set it up, but then we take each listing as an independent customer object and process it one by one.
Yeah.
So that listing goes through the pipeline from the beginning to the end and gets published in its entirety before we move to the next object. So if there's a problem with the listing, you just chuck it into a fix-it table. And instead people say, well, how do you schedule that? We don't schedule, we unschedule it. I'm like, what do you mean you unschedule it? It just runs. So it just is on a loop. It just keeps going. It processes and it goes and asks, hey, is there anything new?
And puts it back on the queue. And then
so we have to slow it down. Instead of telling it to go every 5 minutes, we tell it to slow down and only go every 5 minutes, like back off, you know? That's super cool because that's something really important to a lot of folks. And you know, you've got a product that's, hey, it's about speed. You got to be able to get in there and get it quick.
We did a similar process for our product, Cloud Streams, where, you know, traditional MLSs or portals where, you know, they would slow down the number of saved searches went up, that meant that their listing alerts would also slow down. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was like this inverse kind of, you know, non-scalable thing where we twist exactly what you're doing. It's a listing thing that kind of percolates through the saved searches. So no matter how many saved searches they have, it's going to be a fast, the alert's going to go out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So very, very kind of familiar with that. Anything like any other vendors that you're seeing on the scene that kind of impress you or, you know?
Yeah, actually, there's a couple. You know, I wish I could give them all credit. You know, there's never enough time to go through this stuff. But there's one called Ojo that I think is really interesting.
Ojo.
We're in Austin, Texas, so they're here. AI, because AI is really interesting. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people interacting with, you know, machines that do machine learning and especially when people know that it's a machine and they choose to interact with it. You know, you see that, you know, maybe go buy a car and you're like, please don't come over here. I don't want to talk to you. But you know, if you give somebody a choice to, hey, let me talk to the machine for a while before I'm ready to talk to the person.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you get to the point like, okay, now I do need to talk to somebody. You're in a readied position and it probably enhances the relationship, quite frankly, because, you know, it's at the right time. Nobody's pushed into anything. So they're into that space and into that tech, along with, you know, there's several other companies that are in that space as well, but I love it. And I think it's hilarious. We have one of our sysadmins put in a bot into our Rocket Chat called Beowulf. And Beowulf has a sense of humor. And we'll just chime in on certain conversations at random points. And it's hilarious. We had somebody that was, you know, somebody in our database department was asking some complicated SQL question. Has anybody seen da 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 like this? And Beowulf responds with an animated GIF of a cat at a computer just banging on a keyboard like this. And it's just hilarious.
That's, yeah, that kind of stuff is fun. Slack has some kind of integrations like that
right.
that kind of make it fun. Well, I appreciate you spending the time here. I know you've got a lot to do and everything else, but this has been enlightening and great. And I mean, how do people get in touch with you?
Wolfnet.com.
Wolfnet.com. So Joel at wolfnet.com.
That'll do it.
So here's another thing. Joel McIntosh, do you use a PC or do you use a Mac?
I predominantly am a PC user.
Wow.
I'll tell you a story after this, though, that you really appreciate about Macs.
All right.
I do not. I use them. You
know, yeah, that's there's a little irony there. But anyway, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.